Inanna the Priestess, Part 4, from the book The Return of the Sexual Priestess by Jennifer Posada. You can find out more and hear the rest of this story at jenniferposada.com/Inanna. The mysteries of the sexual priestess had become deeply shrouded, and there was a tense ambivalence about them among the people. Those who held to the old ways remembered these priestesses as the most powerful beings of all known history. The highest honor of all possible human paths in those times had been that of the sexual priestess. But the shift to a male god perceived as equally powerful and property handed down the male line had begun a groundswell of change. Now sexual priestesses were seen as vital still to the temple and community, but only when carefully trained and kept. In the new ways, it was seen as dangerous to work with these sexual energies, and, like fire, as something that must be contained, so that it would not consume the land and cause great destruction. When they had shorn my hair when I arrived at the temple, I had remembered as a child in my village seeing a woman be publicly shamed. Her robe was ripped from her and her hair torn at with stones. I saw it only for a moment, and in an instant my stomach turned and tears burned my eyes, before my mother grabbed my arm and pulled me, much too strongly, away. I could still hear the woman's cries as my mother told me never to look at those women who had, quote, turned away from the goddess. After I had been sent to bed, I heard my parents talking about it that night. They said the woman had been chosen as a sexual priestess, but had decided to marry instead. She had later taken on a lover other than her husband, turning her immediately to an outcast marked by public shaming. Anyone would be allowed to punish her without fault for the rest of her days for this, quote, sin. All night that night, one image stayed in my mind. Not the woman bent and her low moan, but the look on her face when I had turned back one last time before my mother swept me around a corner. It was a look of sheer defiance. It was a look of fire I had never seen on any woman's face, or any person's face at all. Even though her eyes were full of tears, they also seemed to hold the shine only stars have. I marveled at her face, seeing it over and over again in my mind. I knew she knew something I needed to know, but I also knew there might be a price to learn it. I knew I must use stealth to find my way to the secrets she knew. I knew I must use stealth to become free. Somehow. Could I be free some other way, I wondered? Could it be enough to remain in the temple and simply use the inner teachings in my own way within me? In the first year of my training as a sexual priestess, we were taught very strictly, sometimes in states of severe deprivation without sleep or food. We were meant to be able to withstand extreme states and still be able to move the great energy from the base of the spine up into the crown of the skull. We were meant to be able to illuminate the centers of the body involved, the points of most intense energy, but without succumbing to allowing the energy to be erotic. We were meant to use our will, derived and honed by struggling with the deprivation we experienced, to, quote, clean the energy so it could be used in a myriad of ways to support the work of the temple. No sexual priestess could use these energies outside of her very difficult and repetitive practices until she had passed a series of tests, usually years after beginning her training. I became very quickly skilled at moving the energies, but I felt that the deprivation simply slowed me down and weakened me on every level. I wondered what I could achieve if I were nourished. My spirit withered under these conditions, but I used the energy I cultivated to sustain me. I began to slowly shut down the parts of me that couldn't thrive. It hurt too much to feel them. As I did this, I received praise for my work, which I found troubling. But I felt too weak at times to know what else to do. And then something incredible happened. Those of us that completed the first cycle and moved into the second year were told we had shown the fortitude to move into the next level. We would be prepared to do the work, but first we must prove that we could attend to the, quote, cleansing of the sexual life force in locations outside the temple and not be distracted by our outer environment. We were told to go out for 2 separate days of every moon cycle and find a discreet place to practice, then to return to the temple at night for the nightly chants and ritual duties. When I heard this, a light opened in my heart. A spark of something old was finally stirred, and I felt hope filter deep into the place I was living, in the cold underworld inside of me. The first day, as we were led by temple guard/priests to the outer gateways of the temple, tears wanted to well up in my eyes, but I kept them back. I didn't want anyone to know what I felt inside about leaving the temple grounds to have free hours. I didn't pick up my pace as the guard priests stopped and gestured us onward. I kept my gait steady as I observed in my periphery each of we 7 priestesses headed in different directions. I wanted to run, but instead I moved slowly and simply let the tears finally move down my face, glimmering as they were met by the sun. I headed for the river. I could just make out its faint line like a vein just under the skin of the earth in the distance. As I walked, I felt my state begin to alter. I could already feel the birds and the reeds and the water, even though it was not the same spot on the river from my childhood. But I also felt something else. It was like the presence of someone I had known long ago and deeply loved. There was no one in my life like that. So I marveled at that feeling as slowly a tree took more distinct form along the riverbank. And for a moment, my breath caught in my throat, and I could no longer move. I know that tree. That is my tree. That is my hulupu tree. I did not know the word hulupu or why I would call this tree that name. But I knew that tree better than the inside of my hand or the curves of my body. I knew it better than my name or my stories, better than the chants or the part of the river I was born near. I felt it when I walked into her energy field. An ecstasy filled me, and when I reached the V at her trunk, I fell to my knees and wrapped my arms around her. How had I lived so long without her? How had I survived without my soul's very earthly sustenance?